Hello everyone, I'm Laura Kaluger, Senior Associate Editor with Commercial Property Executive, and I'm glad to be the host of a new CPE podcast. Today, I've invited East Bank Principal Philippe Lanier to offer his perspective on the future of retail, one of the hardest hit sectors during the coronavirus pandemic. As a retail landlord in Washington, D.C.'s historic shopping district and neighborhood, Georgetown, Philippe has a few thoughts to share. Hello, Philippe. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
We're roughly 3 months into the pandemic. How much has the retail sector changed during this time?
It's changed a tremendous amount. I think as many of your listeners can see on the media, it's definitely one of the sectors that's impacted by the reduction in mobility, change in consumer habits, concerns about disposable income and whether we have a recession or not. All the retail executives that I've been speaking to are reassessing their business models and trying to chart a new path forward. So it's a real adventure.
And maybe many of the managers you've talked to have also had lots of challenges they had to overcome, besides from cost cuts and maybe layoffs. What other challenges have retail players been dealing with so far?
You know, it's across the board. You know, for me, I'll start at the top. The number one challenge is how do I as a retailer access the customer? And if my stores are forced to be closed, that takes one of the main funnels away. Many people have been relying on their online part of their business to complement that and to continue to connect with the customer. And in doing that, they also recognize the limitations of a digital platform or a digital-only platform. I think the physical piece of the story is a very important one. So they've been working on how to manage their business and continue to stay operational without having that physical store. Then, you know, now that we're at a point where the physical stores can open and many of them have been very busy in opening their stores, they have to reassess how the customer can safely wander through the store and still have a connection to the brand. And every one of those brands have a different approach to that, depending on their merchandising mix and their connection to the customer. They have, as you just mentioned, they have been doing all of this work with a reduced workforce because they furloughed a lot of people. And then there's a lot of logistical and legal challenges along the way that take up a large part of everybody who's there, a large part of their time. They have to manage their logistics and inventory chain. They have to manage the seasonality of their brand and what they're going to merchandise for the, you know, the next 6 months. How much are they going to stock? What do they think people are going to be buying? And then they have to manage the conversations with myself, the landlord, the people that they have made commitments to, and how to continue to pay those commitments given the changing landscape. So it's really a lot that one has to do at the same time.
What have they been telling you about their sales? How have urban store sales been impacted by the outbreak so far?
For the most part, they're down. That's no surprise. The question is how much of the sales that they had lost in the last 3 months, you know, how much might they recapture? Are there certain things that people wanted to buy that they're waiting to get back into the store and buy? Are there some things that went up a little bit that complemented the others that went down? So, you know, athletic apparel continued to see a business as people focused on loungewear and, you know, exercised a little bit more at home or went into outdoor activities like biking and running. Certain furnishing brands, I think, are still doing well as people realize the limitations of their homes and their environment. And then as some of the retailers did open, they reported to me better numbers than they had feared in the first 2 to 3 weeks of their opening as people came in. And what's interesting is when someone does come into the store in this environment, they are coming with the intention to buy something. They're not really wandering the store's window shopping with this limited access environment. But it's too early to say, you know, how that is going to sustain itself in the next 6 months. And I think that our tenants are forecasting. They're really just getting to the beginning of making decisions on where they think the next 6 to 18 months go. But they're forecasting anywhere from 50 to 70% of what they were budgeting 6 months ago as a starting point.
Mm-hmm. And how would you describe the current situation in Georgetown?
I'm optimistic for those of you for those of you listening who haven't been to Georgetown. It's one of America's most historical districts. It is the largest assemblage of co-tenancy in urban retail in Washington, D.C. It's considered one of the top five markets in the country. And Washington right now is arguably the best city in the country in the next 18 months. The government is printing all the money from Washington. The people looking for help have to work with people in Washington. We were already seeing a trend of various companies, particularly in the technology space, adding an office in D.C. in order to be close to government. I only see that accelerating. So I see population growth in D.C. I see stable income in D.C. So longer term, I'm very optimistic about what's going to happen here. And we have, despite the challenges in the industry, we have seen a lot of brands and their brokers contact us and look for spaces to open a new store in the next 18 months. So the longer term picture is quite positive. But short term, you know, what's going on this week and next week, we were exposed to urban riots, as were other cities in America. We were one of the later cities to open their legally open their retail stores. They were allowed to open as of 2 weeks ago. As a positive, that means we have a very low case count and we're not seeing a second wave of cases as you're seeing in some of the other states that opened up earlier. But you're also seeing a cautious consumer that is not running back into the store. You know, it's moving gradually. You know, I'm happy with that. I think that it's great to walk slowly, not trip, you know, create that confidence with the consumer. And I'm very optimistic about what we look like relative to other cities in America.
That's great. What were your tenants' first reactions to the pandemic? Can you tell us a little bit about the conversations you had and continue to have with your tenants?
Between us and our partners, we control about 65-70% of the urban market or the retail market here in Georgetown. So we have a very diverse set of tenants within our portfolio, from local tenants to national brands in all different categories. All of them in the early stage were really reacting first from a human perspective. How do they manage their personnel? How do they give people a sense of safety? And how do they protect their balance sheet as well in the process? So the early conversations were really just, can you give us some time to work this out? And the answer was very quickly, yes. We didn't pressure any of our tenants immediately. We gave them 2 months. We spent the entire period talking to all the senior people and all of the brands that are in our portfolio. So we have a very good sense of how they're performing, how they've been managing their progress through the crisis. It's been a huge amount of work. We are about 80% done with all of our lease renegotiations, which have given all of our tenants relief in 2020, pushed their rental obligation into 2021, and created some roadmaps on how they need to treat their obligations to us if they're forced to shut down again, so that they can focus on running their business and making sales and not spend so much time worrying about the legal contract between us and them. Right now, they're almost entirely focused on what it means to open a store. Since, you know, 3-4 weeks, all the people I've been talking with are focused on staffing the store, merchandising the store, tracking the sales, getting an early indication on how they should really make decisions as a brand for the next 18 months.
What can you tell us about relief funds for Georgetown retailers impacted by the pandemic? What kind of funds did they have access to?
Everybody has been helping. The federal government's PPP program, I think, was wildly well received. There are a number of companies that were excluded from that. A number of our tenants are predominantly owned by foreign entities, so they weren't participating. For instance, some of the Italian furniture brands. Some of the companies were a little too large, so their only access on a federal basis is the Main Street Lending Program, which has only just started to roll out its first loans. But all of those that could apply for the PPP got it and have given us a portion of those receipts as rent. Locally, the DC government provided a lot of small business grants. A number of our smaller tenants applied for those. They were not huge grants, you know, they were $5,000 to $10,000, but every little bit helps. And then we ourselves, either through the restructuring of the lease agreement or through a vehicle that has been offered through some of our partnerships, have as well offered liquidity and loans to our tenants. I will tell you that most of the tenants at this point haven't been taking any loans. They're not looking to take in additional capital with an obligation. They're just looking to keep the cash they have, take any grants that they can have, reduce how much money they're spending, and really plan for the future.
That's good. I'm sure you're very familiar with the reopen DCs before you open checklist for retail businesses. Mm-hmm. How restrictive is it? Is there anything you would have done differently?
I think that it's a very fair approach. The mayor in DC assembled a very thoughtful and large team of participants to work on this checklist and how to react to every different industry. It was well thought through. The amount of people allowed within a space is the right amount for almost all of the stores that we have in our portfolio. The ones that are really challenged by it are the larger stores, those stores mm-hmm. that really built a business model about putting a lot of people in a period of time in a concentrated size and offer them a lot of selection. But there's a natural balance to it, which is that the individual's work week is very different now than it used to be in the past. People can plan their day and their errands working in part remotely and in part in the office so that they can spread their shopping habits throughout the day. In Washington, it wasn't a real 24-hour city. Washington, people shop predominantly in the evenings and a lot on weekends. So I think you'll see people finding the brands that they like with the intent to buy something and see it in person and come spaced out through the day. I don't think that it's going to massively restrict the expected sales the way that the government has put the restrictions in place. I would say the one area that wasn't fully addressed that we are trying to address as a community with our local business improvement district boards is what happens in urban retail, what happens to the people waiting outside to get in. You know, as you line down mm-hmm. the street, you'll create congestion outside the store. And so you'll see in Washington and in many other cities, a number of programs that are temporarily or semi-permanently expanding the sidewalks and allowing the businesses to spill into some form of outdoor and indoor activity.
The second phase of reopening Georgetown allows non-essential retail businesses to have customers inside as long as they operate at no more than 50% of the capacity. What do you think about this measure?
If there's something that you want that you're going to get in a store, you're not going to be held back by the restrictions of how many people are allowed at a time. You'll either wait or you'll come at a time that's less busy. You might see a number of these stores who embrace this new pace of shopping proactively outreach to their customers and start creating some sort of scheduling. So that people know mm-hmm. when they have a slot, the same way that Apple does at their Genius Bar. You might see that matriculate throughout many other forms of retail. And in some ways, it creates a better shopping experience. You're able to plan as a store and as a manager, you're able to plan how to have the right number of staff in a store given the volume that you expect, and how to have the staff interact with the shopper and provide them a real service. Because that's, in some ways, that's the beauty of bricks and mortar retail. You're much better equipped to connect to the customer and provide them some interactive service than you would from an online transaction. So you can ensure that they find what they want.
How would you describe the typical Georgetown local consumer?
We have a little bit of everything. It's what makes it such a good market. We have a very robust young shopper because of all the universities that we have in the area. You have Georgetown University, George Washington University, American University, all within a mobile distance, and all the other universities in town. It's a very high education point, Washington, D.C. If they want to shop physically, Georgetown's the place to go, not to mention all the other things you can do here, given our proximity to the waterfront. So that's the youth. You have a big component of shopper that is, say, a female shopper age 35 to 55. That's always been a high spender in our area. You have the person that is working. Washington, D.C. is a city. It only has around 750,000 residents approximately. The actual workforce, though, is over 3 million. So you have a very large commuter base that comes in and out of D.C., and if they want to buy something on the way out of town, Georgetown's one of the three main arteries into Washington, D.C., so they get something on the way out. And then you have the wide array of local residents. So you really do get a full mix.
And do you expect the pandemic to change the way Georgetowners shop?
I think the pandemic is going to change a lot of things with urban retail because of the lack of mobility. You're not really catering to the tourist as much as you used to. So the extreme example would be Fifth Avenue in Manhattan. It's going to be a while before they get those 20 to 30 million tourists coming in and shopping. So DC will see a bit of a shift to focus more on local, just as other cities will. We luckily were not heavily dependent on the wealthy tourists in our shopping. There was only a component of that. So that's one of the differences. And then, you know, it's not a difference. I think we're going to enjoy what we've always enjoyed, that Georgetown is a place to visit for locals, not only because you can buy something on the main street, but because of the history, because of the proximity to the waterfront, because of the culture that's nearby. So that's not going to change. It's one of the reasons why I remain very optimistic about Georgetown as a urban market.
And considering what you just said, what is your business strategy going forward?
So I think as a landlord, the most important thing that you can do is find a way to maintain flexibility with your tenants. And it's very difficult to make a new deal. And that's what we have to do. There are a number of tenants that are going to seek bankruptcy protection. Not all of them will succeed. There will be vacancy. There will be volatility. We need to have a model that attracts new types of retailers or new retailers back to our empty spaces. And when you have the level of visibility that you have today, it's very difficult to make a 10-year traditional deal. So you have to have legal contracts that provide the tenant flexibility, that create variances around the rent they owe you based on their success and their sales. And as a landlord, you have to make a lot of research. You have to do a lot of effort to make sure that the tenant who's coming into your space is a tenant that really does fit in your market, will do the sales, and therefore will enjoy the rent that they pay you because it's a fair share of what they perceive as success. So our business model is very much focused on how to create that flexibility on the contract. We've been doing that already for 5 years. So we've been trained at this. I think it's something retailers already needed before the pandemic. Then the second thing that we have to do is we have to maintain a tight communication with our local community, with the local regulatory bodies. I'd mentioned the Business Improvement District. Georgetown is a very good one. And our PR agency, and make sure that we manage a cohesive message to the consumer in collaboration with our tenants, so that we're constantly encouraging people to come and shop and see what's changed and what's new in Georgetown and give them a reason to come back, which we have been doing for a long time. We have to double down on that effort. And I won't lie, it is a lot of work. I mean, it's a lot more work than it used to be because you're constantly talking to all of them.
What are your expectations for Georgetown retail businesses for the next 5 years? I mean, when can we expect to be at pre-pandemic levels?
I'm somebody that's more pessimistic on the near term and more optimistic on the long term than most people I speak to. I think it's going to be quite slow through next summer. It's very difficult to establish a consistent consumer confidence when you have the news on the virus and the increases of the virus and the health risks of the virus rolling back and forth across the country inconsistently. So what is bad news in Texas doesn't mean that DC is bad, but the retailer that has a store in Texas is going to be naturally conservative in their approach everywhere. But longer term, I'm very optimistic about our ability as a culture to adapt to this, to learn how to live with the risks. In some ways, it'll make us safer about a whole lot of other things that used to challenge us as a society. And I think that desire to engage with your community and to enjoy your day will persist. And I do think that shopper will come back by next Christmas. And I think in 2022, things will look better than they did in 2019 because of what I said at the beginning of this conversation. DC performs extremely well in a crisis. It's a city that grows in crisis. and the level of government response to this crisis is meaningfully higher than it was through to the 08 financial shock.
How about shorter term? How does the summer holiday shopping season look like?
You can't paint a good picture shorter term for the summer because we only opened halfway through the summer. DC is very hot in the summer, so you're not going to see crowds of people here day in and day out. But you will see some positive compared to summers in the past because people aren't leaving town as much. DC is a very comfortable place to live when you consider urban density because we have such short buildings. You never really feel packed in. So I do see more people meandering about in the evenings and on the weekends. I think that late July, August will be fairly strong. But in its entirety as a summer, you know, we're starting late. So you can't expect too much. I think the best you can expect is us building to a relatively strong fall. And when I say relatively strong, if we do 70% of the sales that we did last fall, I would be pretty happy.
And how do you think the department store needs to shift to survive the current and future retail landscape?
I'm very interested in that question and its answer. I think one of the things that really provides retail flexibility is the ability to manage your inventory and to shift what it is you sell in a particular period of time so that you're always addressing the tastes of the consumer. And a department store is the extreme evolution of that model. A department store is a large building that houses certain wholesale inventory of a wide variety of brands. I think that the historical department store in its 40 to 120,000 square foot size maybe carries too much risk. That's not really relevant today, particularly given how much you can access on the internet. But the business model of having brand relationships and being able to adapt and shift different inventory through a physical space, I think is extremely relevant. And so the department stores of yesterday, I would like to see evolve into taking the workforce and the brain trust and the skills, the brand relationships that they've developed over the last 40 years, but converting them to a more urban model, smaller footprint, lower carrying cost, and more technology behind how they shift the inventory into different markets and online to give brands the ability to have a department store funnel to get their inventory out in a diversified manner.
At the beginning of our conversation, you mentioned consumers' confidence. How can retailers boost consumers' confidence to socialize and get out shopping again?
I think technology. I think providing the consumer as many digital touch points as possible along their journey so that they can share it with the wider community and give other people the confidence that they had a good experience and that next person can have the same good experience. I think that is the fastest form of creating a trend. It's also very important in order to manage negative consequences. If you are highlighted for having a COVID case within one of your stores, whether it is or is not true, that in itself will impact your brand and may, you know, if brand X gets shut down in two cities in America in the same week and the media picks it up, all of a sudden the consumer may not want to go to any of those stores. So you also have to, from a technological perspective, get ahead of any of these negative communications and make sure that they aren't taken out of context. So yeah, my answer is technology.
Well, Philip, thank you very much for taking the time to answer all these questions and for all the insights you provided.
You got it. I'm always here to answer more. It's an evolving story with a lot of hidden surprises left ahead.
You're right. I'm looking forward to our next audio meeting. Until then, visit cpexecutive.com for the latest news on commercial real estate.